Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Hello and welcome to episode 323 of Geek Town Radio. I am back this week with Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good, David. How are you doing?
I'm kind of tired because I was at Wales Comic Con in Telford all weekend, but I'm surviving. I'm here. So, so what have you been up to the last few weeks?
Watched quite a bit of TV over the weekend. One of the shows I finished was Sex Education Season 3, which has been renewed for its fourth season.
Yeah.
Just as good as before, if not even better with this season. I'm not going to get into like too many spoilers or anything, but they get into sort of trying to change to a sex positive school,
right,
with one of the goals sort of being like that we don't shame people, and that's kind of like the main plot line of season two. And they've got a new headmaster, so that's really interesting. Lots of different kind of relationship things going on as well, but not in the sort of CW teen type of way. It's handled much more sort of maturely than that. Not that that's always bad, but you know, the CW, you know, YA thing's got a particular way of doing that. But very much handled in more of a mature way, along with some really, really good writing, some quite emotional scenes as well. Just fantastic characters. I think maybe my favorite character from the show is probably Eric, Otis's main friend. He just has so much charisma. He's never afraid to sort of be who he is. Obviously, he's a black gay man, so obviously that comes with certain things as well. But he goes through a great sort of arc this season as well, particularly with his family and that kind of thing. So that's really good. And there's a particular, have you seen this?
I haven't watched any of it yet. It's one of my list of things that I need to get to.
There's a particular coach trip that's really quite funny and quite wild, but in like a fun way. But no, it's just really, really good. And it's 8 episodes. They're about an hour each. A very, very good watch. Really, really strong series. One point to always note is when you've got such sort of like potentially heavy storylines or sensitive storylines that involve those types of complicated topics, your writing's really got to be top notch. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it could start to fall apart a little bit. But everything was just so good. Directing, writing, acting, you know, everything was just great. So thoroughly enjoyed that third season. So that was really good. Tried I think this is called The Shrink Next Door.
Yes,
the new Apple TV Plus show with Will Ferrell. The woman that plays Agatha on
Catherine Hahn.
She's in the show. You've got Will Ferrell and you've got Paul Rudd. He's this therapist. They have this like flashback sequence and then present day and then sort of flash forward, whatever they're doing, flashing forward or backward. There's two different time sort of periods. And one of them's kind of like a little bit confusing, and it's kind of like supposed to be a bit mysterious as to what's like why a character is acting a certain way. And then they cut back to, I suppose, it's meant to be present time. And they show the process of Will Ferrell's character meeting Paul Rudd. The woman in the show as well, she is Will Ferrell's sister. So you've got that kind of going on there. They're running this like curtain workshop, and Will Ferrell's character ends up getting this like panic attack because of something. And then he bumps into Paul Rudd's character. That kind of introduces the therapist element of the show. It was pretty good. About 35 minutes for the first episode. I've only seen the first one, but that's the basic kind of setup. I really quite enjoyed it so far. I'm looking forward to going back to some more of it. I just didn't quite have time yesterday to do that. But have you seen any of this yet?
I haven't started it yet. It is another one which I've managed to finish a few things off this week. So it's one that I'm looking to go onto next. I'm not the biggest Will Ferrell fan, but I do quite like Paul Rudd. And bizarrely, it's based on a true story. And it seems utterly ridiculous for being a true story because it's basically about Paul Rudd being this psychiatrist or psychologist who implants and sort of takes over the life of Will Ferrell's character and sort of inserts himself into that life and ends up getting way more involved than any therapist ever should. So I think it's based on a podcast which is based off a sort of true crime kind of story sort of thing. Catherine Hahn is the sister of Will Ferrell's character, and then Casey Wilson plays Bonnie, who is the wife of Paul Rudd's character.
It was very good. I think there's four episodes out so far because there's three that came out last week, and then obviously there's been another Friday since then. So that's been quite good. Got up to episode 5 of American Horror Story season 10. I was reading up something about what happened in the episode. Obviously, I won't get into that. And then it said that the season is 6 episodes, which is really unusual for American Horror Story. Yeah. So apparently next week is this Wednesday coming up is the season finale. If you have an 18 rated show and it's called American Horror Story, you can certainly expect some pretty crazy things to happen. There's a lot of times in this season where a character will have the idea of doing something really dark. And I mean really, really dark, involving, like, let's just say younger people. Mm-hmm. Don't want to put too much context into it because it will get into kind of spoilers. And then you'll think, no, you're not going to go do that, are you? That would be really, really dark. And then they go to attempt to do something and it's like, wow, okay. But again, it kind of all, if you like saw the episodes and stuff, it makes sense within the context and the story of this season. Long story short, for kind of the setup, it's about this dad, mum, and this daughter. They go out to this like middle of nowhere kind of town, sort of this ghost town thing, and he's got this writer's block. He's trying to be like a script writer and that. The mum is trying to do this, I think it's this curtain job that she's doing, and the daughter's trying to learn how to play violin. So they all have like specific talents they're trying to get good at. And this person comes along and he introduces this black pill to the dads. And how this pill kind of works is you take the pill and in your creativity just kind of like completely flows. Like he starts writing loads and loads of scripts. Mm-hmm. But the only downside to it, anybody that takes it gets a bloodlust. Right. So it works itself from there. I'm not going to say who else gets to take this pill or whatever, but it's mainly about the dad, him trying to navigate this admittedly quite awkward double life of trying to get blood from different places and trying to be like a working dad working on these scripts. And like there's a few sort of lines and plot lines about him working with Netflix and all this kind of stuff as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they've had 5 episodes. They've done some particularly dark things this season, but again, it's American Horror Story, so I'm not shocked. It's more just sort of, wow, okay, you did go there with that, but then it makes sense with, mm-hmm. with all the context around everything. So yeah, again, if you're going to watch a show called American Horror Story, that's some of the and if you know, we're into season 10, the show's not new, there's even like a spin-off now as well, so Ryan Murphy is used to these kind of dark ideas, I suppose. But it's pretty good so far, and it's interesting with the 6 episodes. We'll see how it wraps up on Wednesday. So that's been quite good. Yeah, I just wanted to ask you how you're getting on with Zoe's playlist. That's my last thing.
I'm still loving it. It's up to with the last one I saw was Zoe's Extraordinary Birthday, which is episode 8. So slightly over halfway maybe at the moment. And that was a great episode. You know, things are kind of moving along. I'm looking forward to being able to get to the end and then watch the Christmas special thing that's coming on December 1st onto Roku. So
cool.
But yeah, I'm loving this season, and I just hope that Roku decide to carry on and do more of it afterwards as well.
They've been really promoting it a lot on Twitter. Not that that speaks to if they're going to do a third season, but that's just a good sign. So yeah, they've even started doing this like 12 Days of Zoe's Christmas or something. And like Lionsgate have gotten involved and Roku have gotten involved, so it looks like things are going well with that. So
yeah,
all right, that's kind of what I've been up to. How about yourself?
Well, as I said, I'm a little bit exhausted because I was mm-hmm. at Wales Comic Con in Telford all weekend. Lots of amazing panels, some great cosplay as well. There will be some videos going up, I hope. Certainly, I recorded the cosplay masquerade. That's definitely will go out at some point. For cosplay fans, you'll be able to go and see that. In terms of the other panels, John Barrowman was there, who did a panel with a bunch of the Torchwood cast and also did a sort of evening with, where he was wearing an absolutely fabulous TARDIS dress for that panel. It was brilliant. He was wonderful throughout. Those panels definitely won't be going online, because John, with everything he's gone through in the last sort of 9 months, obviously doesn't want any panels going out that could be taken out of context or anything like that, with all the other trouble he's got. So none of his stuff is going online. There were some other people there as well. Mark Shepherd, who I think most people will know as Crowley from Supernatural, but he's been in just a million other things. Battlestar Galactica, he's popped up in Doctor Who. And Mark's always wonderful to hear talk. He was great. There was a Doctor Who panel, which was Peter Davison, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy and Paul McGann, who were utterly hilarious and just delightful. Those four together were great. There was a Charmed panel with Holly Marie Coombs and Brian Krause. They play Piper and Leo on the original Charmed series. They were sort of the husband and wife, and they still bicker like husbands and wife. It's really funny. They were just wonderful. She's very dry and sarcastic, and they were just great fun. I really enjoyed that panel as well. Middle Earth panel with Sean Austin, Billy Boyd and John Rhys Davies, which was, I think, partly because John was there the longest panel out of the lot, I think. That was really funny, because it was literally, they hadn't seen each other in a few years, so I don't think anybody really asked a question. They literally just sat the three of them down, introduced them, and then the three of them just talked to each other for 40 minutes. It was just wonderful, and it was like just sat watching three friends like discuss things. There were a couple of questions maybe in there, but generally, I mean, it was just the three of them talking to each other, so that was really lovely. There was a Buffy Angel panel with Charisma Carpenter and James Marsden, who, again, they were great. A Stargate panel with Joe Flanagan, Michael Shanks and David Nylick, I think his name is, who played Dr. Radek on Atlantis. Joe was obviously the lead on Atlantis, and Michael Shanks was one of the leads on SG-1. They were really fun, and they were just bouncing off each other. They were really good. So those were all the panels. In terms of other guests that were there, Red Dead Redemption 2 guys were there again. They were at MCM recently, but so because they've all been quite close together, I think a lot of people have come over and have like done this show. They were doing MCM. There was a Liverpool con last weekend as well, so a bunch of them have been up and done that. So they've been bouncing around the country doing different conventions, because they've been like one a week. Red Dead Redemption 2 guys were at this. Paul Blackthorne from Arrow. There was a bunch of random Star Wars people. Veronica Taylor, who is the main voice of Pokemon. The Ruby cast were there. Random Will Meller from Two Pints of Lager was there. Michelle Collins from EastEnders. Mark Addy from Game of Thrones was there as well. So they were all sort of doing selfies and autographs and all that stuff. Randomly, Ryan Hurst popped up on the Sunday. And Ryan Hurst shouldn't have been there. He should have been at LFCC, London Film Comic Con, in London. But from what I can tell, there seems to have been some sort of disagreement over the price that LFCC wanted to charge for autographs and selfies. And there was some sort of disagreement with LFCC over stuff. I don't know whether that's true or not. That's just the stuff that people have been posting online. But for whatever reason, there seems to have been some falling out between Ryan and LFCC. And he basically went, well, screw you guys, I'm going to Wales Comic Con instead. So he just upped and left, and there were photographs and stuff booked, because there was a bunch of Sons of Anarchy guys down at LFCC, and there were supposed to be group photographs booked with Ryan and a bunch of the other guys, and Ryan decided that he didn't like the way he's been treated, apparently, and came up to Wales instead. So, I mean, lovely to see him, but I do rather feel a bit sorry for people that were kind of had photographs and things booked for him on Sunday down at London, and then suddenly he announces he's going to be in Telford instead. So, yeah. I mean, great for us because we're up there, but little weird, you know. So anyway, he was there. As I say, hopefully there will be videos from some of those panels going up online at some point in the not too distant future. I'm just trying to work out with the con exactly what's okay to post and what isn't and all that sort of stuff. So they will be going up at some point. In TV wise, The Lost Symbol, which landed on Sky Max over here, which is actually a Peacock show, but weirdly, although Peacock launched, it didn't launch as part of Peacock. It launched a few days afterwards and on Sky Max instead. But anyway, it's that's the adaptation of the Dan Brown thing. The story basically follows a younger version of Robert Langdon, who is hired by the CIA to solve a bunch of like deadly puzzles, as Robert Langdon sort of goes on to do after his mentor has been kidnapped or has gone missing. And his mentor is played by Eddie Izzard. It's Ashley Zuckerman from Succession who plays Langdon in this. That's the sort of basic setup for it. It's really well put together. I'm about halfway through at the moment, so I've been really much enjoying the episode so far. I actually interviewed two of the cinematographers on that show, so they'll be going out on the Behind the Scenes podcast, and one of the cinematographers is also one of the directors of the episodes as well. They also work on Titans, interestingly. A lot of the Titans team also work on The Lost Symbol behind the scenes, so a lot of Behind the Scenes crew are the same, which is bizarre, but that seems to be the case, because it's all shot up in Vancouver, and of course both shows are shot up in Vancouver. Have you caught any of this yet?
No, I haven't been able to yet. I basically jumped from Good Girl season 4 onto Sex Education season 3.
Right, yeah. So I would say it is definitely worth watching. The puzzles are quite nice and well put together. It's really beautifully shot. I mean, they've done a lovely job. It's got a very particular style to it, and that works really, really well. I was worried it may just feel a bit like a CBS procedural, but it definitely feels like something above that. Got a bit more weight behind it, and it's far more interesting than your sort of, you know, run-of-the-mill kind of procedural thing. I think they've done a really nice job with it. It's 10 episodes in the first season. It is all available to stream on Sky and Now TV right now, so you can go and watch it. And then, I mean, they're running it out weekly on Sky Max as well, but it is all up there if you want to go and binge through it as a box set. The other thing that I watched was Tiger King 2, because that is back for another season, and that's been really interesting. It's only 5 episodes this time around, and you did wonder where they were going to go with it, because, I mean, of course, Joe Exotic, who is the main person behind it, is in prison. So you do wonder where they were going to go with the second season, because it can't really follow Joe directly because he's not really gone anywhere, you know? So the second season does focus a little bit more on the other people that are on the outside, with a conversation with Joe via the phone in prison, with him kind of adding bits and pieces in and sort of almost narrating and introducing bits in some ways with his thoughts on sort of what has been going on. So it does follow his case and things moving forward, but also does a lot more about the other characters. So there is quite a deep dive in the second episode into Carol Baskin's husband and his disappearance, and more about that side of things. It deals a lot more with Jeff Lowe, who was the person who allegedly set Joe up. There's a lot more stuff about that and what happens to them moving forward. It introduces a couple of other people as well. Very, very interesting. If you like the first Tiger King, this is just very much a continuation of that. It's not quite as crazy and manic as the first one, although there are still some pretty mental things in this as well. I'm quite interested to see where it goes, you know, and whether they come back with a sort of Tiger King 3. I'm sure they will, if they can find some way of kind of doing more in the case moves on.
Surely it's a little bit limited as to, like, you can't, how many seasons of this thing can you do?
Well, yeah, because eventually I would hope it resolves itself, because there are ongoing investigations still into various people that are involved in it. Joe is still protesting his innocence and is still trying to sort of get out.
Of course.
Of course. I don't know how much more you could do unless there is some sort of major change in the status of Joe, like he does manage to get out, or he manages to get some of the charges dropped, or whatever that is. So I don't know where...
How long has he been in prison for? Because I don't know.
3 years, I think, he's been in now.
Oh, really? Quite recent, then.
Yeah, I mean, he'd only just been locked up, I think, prior to the original Tiger King coming out. So
yeah,
it's very bingeable still. I mean, it's very much got one of those things where they're very clever in the way it's constructed. In the last sort of 5 minutes of the episode, it sort of teases where they're going to go with the next episode, and you're like, oh, I need to see this. Yeah. It's like, press play on the next one. So you do find your way through it.
I also find it interesting how, I mean, Netflix probably did this because of how big the first season blew up. But second season doesn't seem to have done that at all. I mean, I completely kind of forgot that it came out until until you put it in these notes. Whereas before, like most TV Facebook groups I was in and it, you know, everything like that, Facebook, different people posting about it, and it was like all over the place. This season just seems to have kind of like, I didn't know it actually came out this time. So mm-hmm. I just wonder how Netflix would be looking at that. But then if the numbers are still good, but the social media aspect is a bit quieter, then maybe they'll continue it. But as I kind of said before, like how long can you actually keep this going?
Exactly. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think there is probably, I don't know whether there's a third season in it, but I think there is probably maybe a sort of 2-hour wrap up movie thing that right. you could possibly like special, do. Yeah. But it very much depends, you know, they're sort of up to date at the moment. By the end of the fifth episode, it's kind of got to the point where they are up to date with where everything is, as far as I can tell. So it's sort of a case of there needs to be more happened before they could make more about it, because, you know, you are dealing with real life cases and there needs to be some movement on that before you could actually kind of do any more on it. And I mean, as I'm sure a lot of people are aware, the first one just landed at the right time. It was after people had been locked down, people had kind of binged through things already, they were looking for things to watch, and that just was a wonderful piece of escapism. And that's why it went down so well the first time. So I think that's probably why you're not seeing the second season around as much as maybe you did in the first season.
Yeah.
But certainly, if you enjoyed the first season, the second season is definitely, definitely worth watching. It is a continuation. As I say, not quite as bonkers as the first season, but it's still very interesting. And particularly the second episode, I thought, which was all about Don, who is Carol's missing husband, I thought was particularly interesting.
Okay.
Other than that, there were the finales for The Morning Show and Foundation. Foundation being the adaptation of the Isaac Asimov novels. I mean, I'm not going to even try and explain the plot for that. It's a really, really good series, and it's very, very well crafted and well written, because it is one of those books that you look at and think, this shouldn't be filmable, because it jumps through time. There are characters that kind of seemingly die and come back, and there's a lot of space travel, timey-wimey-ness. You've got, yeah, I'm not going to even try and explain it, but there's so much stuff going on in there, and it does a great job in being able to hold it together so well. You do feel like you're kind of clinging on by your fingertips sometimes of following the story, but they do a really good job in explaining things, but it's not something you can kind of half watch while you're playing on your phone. It is something you need to focus on. It's a really well-crafted sci-fi. It looks incredible. I don't know how much they spent on it, but I would definitely urge you to go and watch Foundation on Apple TV Plus, particularly, I mean, if you like the Isaac Asimov novels, I think you're probably going to be quite happy with what they did. I think it's been a pretty reasonable adaptation. As I say, I mean, you would look at it and think, this shouldn't work at all, but they've done a really good job with it. So if you like sci-fi, it's a decent, high quality sci-fi that's well worth watching on Apple TV. Morning Show also came to a conclusion this week as well. Are you up to date on that?
I've got just the finale left to watch, yeah. But it's been pretty crazy leading up to the finale. Because I remember last time we talked, I was like a few episodes behind. So I went and got caught up, yeah. But that's been fantastic this season.
It's been superb once again this season. I don't want to give any spoilers away for anything that happens this season, but if you've not caught The Morning Show yet, it is definitely a really good drama, well worth watching, and there's some wonderful performances in the second season. I think I mentioned previously there's a really good car ride between Jennifer Anderson's character and the guy that plays Chip, I think it is, who is a producer, and there is an argument they have in the car, which is one of my favourite scenes out of that entire season, because it's just so well played, of sort of heartbreakingly tragic but hilariously funny at the same time. I really think they've done an amazing job with that. It deserves the awards it gets thrown at it, most definitely. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of that, because I don't know whether it officially has been renewed yet, but it will be. I mean, it'll come back. There's no way it won't. Apple TV knocking it out of the park again, as usual.
Yeah, still watching things like Dickinson and what's it called, Invasion. I tell you what, not this week's episode of Invasion, the one before was unbelievably intense. It was brilliant. So I've been really enjoying that as well.
That's on my list of things I need to get to. So
I want it to be renewed.
Yeah, well, we'll see, because it's one of those things that I suspect was quite expensive to make, and I don't know how much traction that particular show has got, so we'll have to wait and see. see with that. So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
We kick off the TV and film news with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. There is one cancellation this week, which is The Sinner, which was the, I think it's Jessica Biel that stars in that. It's a four-season show. It's Netflix internationally, and that has been cancelled after four seasons. Does seem to have been a cancellation because the fourth season was airing and it was about four episodes from the end and they announced it wasn't coming back. So I think that's a cancellation rather than them actually concluding it.
And that's an anthology show.
I believe it is. It certainly started out as an anthology.
I've seen the first two seasons, yeah, and they were both anthology. I never got around to the third season, though. I think that was also a different story.
So in which case, it doesn't matter that they've cancelled it after four seasons. I mean, other than if you enjoyed it, but story-wise, it should wrap up at the end of the fourth season. In terms of renewals and Netflix, again, they've renewed Arcane, which is the League of Legends video game prequel thing animated series. They've apparently renewed that for a second season, so that seems to have gone down quite well. In pickups and other news, Marvel's Hitmonkey, which we actually had on the list last week for airing, at some point at the very last minute, they appeared to have moved it because there was a date where it was supposed to pop up. And for whatever reason, I'm not entirely sure why, but the new date that they have penciled in at the moment is apparently the 26th of January 2022 on Disney Plus. I don't know why they've moved that, but they have, apparently. So Marvel's Hitmonkey, if you went looking for it last week, apologies, that date doesn't seem to have been right, but it was at the time we were given it. So that's moved. One of the other things which have popped up completely out of nowhere, a very Solar Holiday Opposites special, which was the Christmas special they announced at the end of last season, that magically appeared on Disney Plus today. So that is there now. I think it's only 24 minutes long because they're not hugely long episodes. So though it's a special episode, it's not like extended or anything. But that is up on Disney Plus for you to watch right now. So that is there. I adore that show. It's just hilariously funny. So,
Like it.
That is up if you like Solar Opposites. The Christmas holiday special thing is up. Peacock launched last week as well, although it's what Sky are describing as a soft launch, so it's got a limited amount of content. There are a number of like the Peacock originals which aren't even on there right now, so it's got, I don't know, maybe added 30 box sets or something to it and a bunch of films, so there wasn't a huge amount that it brought on. They brought some of the Peacock originals across, but not all of them yet. The plan is to ramp up the content as time goes on. It's also interesting that they've not launched it as a separate app. They've basically added it to either the catch-up system or the box set system. There is now a Peacock section. If you look either under catch-up or under box sets, there is a Peacock separate tab that's got all the Peacock shows in it. It's not being launched as a separate app, although I'm being told that that is something that they have in the works coming later. It is actually a free service in the US, so presumably when the app launches, it will be a free ad-supported service in the UK as well. I don't know whether it's going to always be tied to the Sky and Now TV structure or whether it's going to be, the app will be available freely. I'm not sure. At the moment, it is only a soft launch, so it is only available if you're part of the Sky or Now ecosystem, so it is available on those platforms. But I mean, it's more free content, so you know, can't really complain too much.
I saw a couple of things on there, but I haven't like watched any of it yet. But I saw some of the, like the Peacock labels on there. I saw something for Downton Abbey, which was interesting.
Yeah, the whole of Downton Abbey is apparently going to be on there.
Yeah, just be interesting when how they kind of organise it and everything.
Yeah, there has been a few box sets and a few things that are sort of premiered over here. So Rutherford Falls, which is a Peacock original, that's from Mike Saw, who was the guy that did The Good Place. He's got a comedy on there. So So given that it's from him, that's one that I want to check out. The Saved by the Bell reboot revival thingy, that is also up on there on the Peacock as well. There is a drama called The Village, which was a one season thing that was cancelled, but that is up there. And Council of Dads, which is a one season thing as well, that's also up on Peacock. And there are a bunch of other films and a few box sets and things. So there are some of the Peacock originals which aren't up on there. There was this one called Girls Five Ever, which is supposed to be launching on there, and that's a Peacock original. They haven't added that yet. So it is, as I say, very much a soft launch. There is more content coming over time. They've just shoved a few things on there now to kind of launch it, and it will grow. But as I say, it's free, so you can't really complain too much. The other thing is, which I can't remember whether we mentioned this last week, because I can't remember which side of me recording the podcast the news came out, but Superman and Lois has finally got a UK air date. Weirdly, on BBC. It's coming to BBC One. It's going out at 5:45 on Saturday, the 4th of December, they've said. Although all the episodes are going to be dropping on iPlayer, so you'll be able to watch it as a box set from that time as well. Interesting pickup for them, and a slightly interesting time slot, because, I mean, that's sort of what I would call the traditional Doctor Who kind of time slot, or it's where they used to run Lois and Clark series, I think, ran when they ran that back in the 90s. That was sort of around this time slot. And just make me wonder whether the person that did the scheduling had seen the show, because it's very much not Clark and Lois. It's very much a, you know, older teen drama, this show. There was a lot of concern that there may be stuff cut out of it, given that they're running at that time. That is probably true of the airing on Saturday. There may be some stuff that they make cuts to. Although, if it's all going on as a box set onto iPlayer at that time as well, the chances are that the iPlayer ones won't be cut, I would have thought. And I think they've bought it primarily for iPlayer because it's got a sort of, it's very much in that BBC Three territory, you know? Okay. Look at the shows that they've picked up for BBC Three. It feels more in that kind of area. And I think they bought it more for iPlayer, but they thought, what the hell, we'll run it out on Saturday night. So I suspect the iPlayer ones won't be cut. I don't know this for sure, but I suspect the iPlayer versions won't be cut. The ones that actually air live on TV possibly will be. But we'll see when it goes out. But 4th of December, they've said, for that.
Yeah, the DC shows continue to get spread all over the place.
Yes.
But it's a good pickup for BBC. Of course, I've questioned their promotional strategy in the past, both for their own shows and for other shows that they've got. I'm not going to get too much into that because I've mentioned it a dozen times. But I mean, it's a Superman show. You know, Superman's one of the biggest characters in the world.
Yes.
So you should probably be as loud as possible in telling people the fact that you've got a TV show based on him. Mm-hmm. So we will see how they handle it. But it's good that somebody at least has got it. I suppose that's good. And then when they get around to running season two, hopefully they'll be able to air it relatively close to that. So we'll see.
I hope so. I hope that is the case. For those of you worried about, oh, this is going to screw over any future crossovers, I rather get the feeling that I think those Arrowverse shows are done with full-blown crossovers, because we have got one coming up, but it's not really a crossover. The entire thing is within The Flash. The Armageddon event thing is 5 episodes of The Flash, which brings in characters from other shows. It's not split across the various different shows. And I think that if they're going to do more of those events, I suspect that they will continue to do it in that way, because partly it's a pain for them to shoot them. So there's that. Also, I think because in America, people are now watching both on the CW and on HBO Max, because a lot of these shows air across both. So for their audience, it's also difficult, because if they start to split it across shows, it makes things tricky for people that are watching them on different platforms over there. So I think they'll probably abandon the idea of splitting them across shows moving forward. Plus, I mean, there is a distinct possibility that this is going to be the final season of The Flash anyway. We don't know that for certain. They haven't said either way, but it feels like they're getting to a point where maybe this will be the last season, in which case you've only really got Superman, Batwoman and Stargirl kind of running together. So there isn't really that much you could do in terms of crossover anyway. What they've done with The Flash is they've taken people from Supergirl and Black Lightning, which are already ended, and put them into the opening of The Flash. That's the way they've handled it, so they're not having to juggle stealing characters off other shows and doing it that way, which I think is an easier way for them to handle it, because you're using characters that haven't got scheduled clashes and having to run backwards and forwards between stages and that sort of thing.
I find it interesting how both now the TV and the film sections of DC have kind of stopped doing crossovers, apart from this Armageddon thing, which, like you said, it is contained within The Flash. Because if you don't watch The Flash and you watch, let's say, Batwoman's Stargirl, Superman and Legends or something, you're not really getting a whole lot of crossover. So I just find it interesting how both of them have kind of stopped doing bigger things like that. So I wonder if that's something within DC or within Warner Brothers, or if it's just a bit of some sort of coincidence.
It's also a little weird because they made a big thing about, hey, we live in a multiverse, so we can have all these different disparate things. And at the same time,
they haven't done anything with it.
Yeah, they haven't. They've sort of, because they've said, hey, we live in a multiverse, so he's three different Batmen. You know? So they have sort of done something with it. They've just not done it in a way that we sort of expected, which I just find interesting. And, you know, it's allowed them to do different versions of characters and stuff. And maybe it does free them up a little bit more. But yeah, it is weird that they do seem to have stopped any form of crossover stuff to a certain extent.
It's funny how, because like you said, how they kind of said that we're in a multiverse, which includes like everything. So like Titans, the Joker film, and you know, all these other completely different things. But they've not really used it in a way of an actual multiverse is supposed to be used. Whereas what Marvel seemed to be doing, especially with this kind of like Spider-Man stuff as well, is how you're kind of supposed to do a multiverse. I don't know. DC's almost kind of doing a multiverse in a weird, confusing sort of way.
But I mean, we've got to wait until the Flash movie comes out, because I mean, that seems to be the one thing that is going to play around in that stuff. So we'll see what happens. For the moment, though, like I say, Superman and Lois, Saturday the 4th of December, that lands on iPlayer and on BBC One. It's going out on as well, but the entire thing will be on iPlayer for you to watch there, and that's probably the better place to go and watch it. Does mean we get it without breaks, which is nice.
Cool. That's good. Yeah, good.
The other elephant in the room, Star Trek Discovery. 2 days before it was due to drop, and everybody had assumed it was going to drop onto Netflix when it usually does, which is the day after it runs out on Paramount Plus in the US. We were all kind of assuming that, but there were kind of murmurs because Netflix hadn't actually officially published a date. So the week before, I started to look at it going, this is a bit weird. They've not promoted it at all. But that's not unheard of with Netflix. Sometimes they don't. They just drop things. And it was just a little bit odd. I know we're starting to get questions of like, do we know this is coming? And I'm like, I'm not sure. And then 2 days before, you know, everybody assumed it was going to drop on Netflix, Paramount Plus announced that it wasn't going to be dropping on Netflix. They'd taken it off there, and it was going to go on to Paramount Plus globally. The only problem with that is Paramount Plus hasn't launched globally and doesn't until next year. So they're now launching Star Trek Discovery Season 4 and have basically screwed over the rest of the world outside of the US. So there was a statement from Paramount Plus that said, as we rapidly expand our global streaming footprint, we are bringing more of our top titles home to Viacom CBS for Paramount Plus markets around the world. We have a strong global and local content pipeline that positions us for success across our regions, and repatriating beloved series like Star Trek Discovery for Paramount Plus is another step forward as we bring fans more much-watched series worldwide. Which all sounds great if you had a service to put it on, which you don't. So, yeah, I mean, as far as I can tell, the reason and the timing of this, it looks like Paramount Plus is going to launch in early 2022. Now, this series of Star Trek Discovery, assuming it's 10, 13 episodes, which is what it usually is, means it will end, if it's 13 episodes, let's assume that, it will end in the middle of February, which means if Paramount Plus launches at some point, say in January worldwide, That means you can drop the first half of the season on there and then run them out alongside the US up until the finale. I sort of get the executives' logic behind this, because I think what their side of thinking is, yeah, I'm sure there are people that are now going to go and find other means to go and watch it, but they're likely to then also go and subscribe because of the fact that it's a lot easier than going to find it somewhere else. And they also seem to be implying that all the other Paramount Plus shows, i.e. all the other Star Treks, are going to end up back on Paramount Plus internationally. So they're probably going to end up subscribing anyway. So ultimately, even if people do and go watch it by other means, we've not lost anything because they're going to end up subscribing anyway. I think that's probably their logic, but it's not a good look and it does really upset the fans. So yeah, thoughts?
I couldn't believe how kind of last minute it was. That was because I was kind of at work. I was sort of checking Twitter and that sort of thing, because I'd seen something come up like on the way to work, and I was like, that's weird. There's like these rumors that Star Trek isn't going to be coming out on Friday. I was like, no, that can't be right. It'll probably be out on Netflix on Friday, and I'll cover the first episode. Because that was a plan I had. I mean, earlier in the week, on like the Monday or Tuesday, I made the first four drafts for four episodes, and that was apparently a waste of time. But I mean, there's a lot of different variables to talk about here, because obviously you've got this issue where the season's launched in November for the US, and then we might not get it until early or mid-February or something. And although you're right about the whole, okay, they'll just jump onto Paramount Plus in the end anyway, you still are missing something from the fact that, because Paramount knows that, okay, yeah, we're not launching it internationally, whether it's, you know, launching the service earlier or putting the season onto Netflix or somewhere else, you know. Mm-hmm. They know that people on the Friday are going to go online and look for it elsewhere. They're probably very well aware of that. And they know that they've lost at least that audience kind of temporarily. And what I mean by temporarily is that in like a few months after that, people will obviously subscribe to Paramount Plus and then get the episodes like properly that way. Because I follow a few of the actors on Twitter and stuff, and even they were saying like, hey, sorry, we all thought it was kind of coming out on Friday. We weren't really aware. And
yeah,
because obviously they want to promote the show that they're on, and you know, it's a big happy Star Trek family and all that kind of thing. And they're like, hey, this was kind of dropped on us last minute as well. We didn't know. And they wanted to promote the show that they're on, but there's no point in them doing that when the show that they're promoting, people can't watch it legally. Well, so it was a difficult thing for them as well, I suppose.
The worst thing about that was there was the big Star Trek destination, which is the huge UK Star Trek convention, literally the week before. And all the actors were there going, hey, go and watch it on Netflix next week. You know, they hadn't been told, which, I mean, I've always said, never, ever ask an actor about when a show airs, because unless they happen to be an exec producer as well, even then it's not true necessarily. But the actors are always the last people to be told about air dates for TV shows. They're always the worst people for being able to give dates, because not in the US, but certainly internationally, they have no clue. I mean, we had this with the Chucky series, because we had I think it was the creator of the show actually tweeted out, hey, it's coming to Sky next week. And I'm looking at the listings going, no, it's not. I mean, it's coming to Sky, yes, but it's not coming to Sky next week. Chucky is now up on Sky, but this was sort of last month sometime. So although they might know who has bought it, they have no control over the international scheduling at all. In this particular case, they should have been given a heads up, because, I mean, Viacom obviously knew that there was a huge convention coming, and the showrunners knew there was a huge convention coming. So you would have thought that somebody at Viacom would have had the good graces to give somebody at the show some form of heads up to say, hey, by the way, it's going to go off Netflix, so don't push it on there. But I mean, just the timing of this. I've less issue with them doing it, because I understand them wanting the show back, and I understand them wanting the show back when Paramount Plus launches, because it would be weird to launch Paramount Plus and go, hey, come and get Paramount Plus. By the way, one of our biggest shows is actually airing on a rival streaming service. So I can get why they want to do it. Just the timing of it really is awful.
Yeah, it was pretty bad timing and planning, definitely.
Yeah.
So
it would have even been better if they could have said, we are taking Star Trek Discovery back for Paramount Plus when it launches on this particular date. Because at least that way people would have been gone, okay, it's launching on January the whatever or February the whatever. That sucks, but at least we know when it's dropping. Because at the moment, they still haven't actually announced a date for when Paramount Plus is going to launch internationally. We are assuming, and the rumor is that it will be January or maybe February, so sometime very, very early on. It would make sense that it is before the end of Star Trek Discovery Season 4 finishes. Otherwise, why wouldn't you just leave it on Netflix internationally? You know, if you're going to leave it until March, that's really going to suck, because then you've just screwed over a bunch of people for no particular reason.
Mm.
So what they should have done is tied the two things together and tied the announcement of the international launch to the fact that they'd moved Star Trek Discovery as well. If you're wondering what other shows this affects, as far as what we've been told at the moment, Picard and Lower Decks are both staying on Amazon for now, at least. My guess is because they currently have a deal in place and the next season of Picard has already been shot. And if Amazon have put money into the next season of Picard, then obviously they get to have it. So I assume that's the reason why, and I'm assuming that Lower Decks is tied up in that deal somehow. So for now, they've said that those are staying there. I suspect they will move eventually, but at the moment, they're staying on Amazon internationally. Outside of the Star Trek shows, you have got things like The Good Fight and Why Women Kill and Evil, which are all shows which are on Paramount Plus over there. Good Fight airs on More4 and Why Women Kill airs on Alibi. Wouldn't be surprised if both those end up going on to Paramount Plus instead. Evil is an interesting one because it started off on CBS and then got moved onto Paramount Plus, so I don't know what that means internationally with the contracts. SEAL Team is the other one as well, because that's also a CBS show that was then moved onto Paramount Plus in the US. I suspect that Sky will probably still get first run rights for that, and then it maybe goes on to Paramount Plus for catch up. But again, we don't know about those shows, but those are the ones to watch. Why Women Kill, The Good Fight, Evil, and SEAL Team are the other potential ones that could be disrupted by the Paramount Plus launch with the moving. If, you know, because as she said in that statement, they are trying to move some of their exclusive series back onto the service. In terms of all the Star Trek stuff that are upcoming, like Strange New Worlds, weirdly, Strange New Worlds wasn't in the original press release. Star Trek Prodigy was, but Strange New Worlds wasn't. But I can't see them selling Strange New Worlds somewhere else. If they're already going to bring Discovery back, why would you then go and sell Strange New Worlds to an external service? So I would assume that Strange New Worlds is going to go out on Paramount Plus as well, because that would be ridiculous if they suddenly announced, oh, that's going to Amazon. That would be very weird. So I would assume that all Star Trek series going forward are going to end up on Paramount Plus internationally as well.
What's funny is, out of the two streaming services we had on the way, Peacock came out before Paramount, but Paramount was the one that we kind of needed first.
Yeah.
Because if Paramount had launched when Peacock did, which was before this happened, then Star Trek would have probably come out on that week. But obviously we got Peacock first, which has got nothing to do with Star Trek.
Yeah. For those of you wondering about where Paramount is launching, it's different to the Peacock deal. There is a deal in place with Sky. So if you're a Sky Cinema subscriber, you will get Paramount Plus free at no additional cost along with your Sky Cinema subscription. For some reason, I think probably because there's quite a lot of movie back catalogue in there, they've tied it to the Sky Cinema subscription. So if you've got Sky Cinema, you will get Paramount Plus for free. However, the actual thing is going to be launched, they are saying, as a separate app as well. So if you don't have Sky Cinema, you will be able to subscribe to Paramount Plus as a separate thing. It'll work, I think, as part of Sky in the same way that Netflix does. So it's more like the Netflix deal where you can pay for Paramount Plus through Sky, but you will also be able to subscribe outside of the Sky ecosystem as well. So it will be a completely independent app in the same way that Netflix has its own independent app. So yes, it's an additional streaming service. Yes, you are going to have to pay for it unless you're a Sky Cinema customer. But it doesn't mean that you have to have Sky to get it, because I've seen that rumor flying around. That isn't true. They've done a deal with Sky to have it as part of Sky Cinema, but you don't have to have Sky to be able to get Paramount Plus. You can pay for that as a separate service. Moving on to another streaming service, Disney Plus, they have made an announcement on the Star Wars Ahsoka series. Natasha Lou Bordizzo has been cast, apparently, as Sabine Wren in the Star Wars Ahsoka series. The Society is probably where people will know her for the Netflix series. She is being cast as a lead opposite Rosario Dawson, who is playing, obviously, Ahsoka in the live-action series. She will be playing Sabine Wren, who, of course, is one of the characters from Star Wars Rebels. If you're trying to remember where we last saw Sabine, spoilers if you've not watched Rebels, but at the end of Rebels, it basically ends up...
I'll turn my volume down for a second because I haven't seen it.
At the end of Rebels, we see Ezra Bridger kind of disappears off into unknown space, kind of whisked away by the Purgles, who are space whales, essentially, as a way of getting rid of Grand Admiral Thrawn, and Ahsoka and Sabine set off on a quest to try and go and find him and bring him back to them and to his home planet, essentially. That's where sort of things end. So it sort of makes sense that Sabine is going to be coming back into Ahsoka's story along the way. It does mean that we might get a live action version of Ezra, and it also means we might get a live action version of Thrawn possibly as well, which will be quite awesome. The Ahsoka series has been written by Dave Filoni as well, who of course is the mastermind behind Rebels and half the mastermind behind The Mandalorian as well, alongside Jon Favreau. And Filoni and Favreau are also exec producing the Ahsoka series as well. She looks good for the role, I think. I like the character of Sabine. I think she's really awesome. She's a Mandalorian, of course, as well, so that sort of ties in, although she's kind of far more arty. She was a graffiti artist as well and a sort of a former Academy dropout. And I mean, she's a really interesting character, so I think that could work really, really well. And I think she's quite a good pick for it, definitely.
Cool. It's coming together quite nicely, all of this. I like the idea of the Ahsoka series itself. I was quite impressed with Rosario in that, what was it, two episodes or so for The Mandalorian?
One or two episodes
that she was in. That was quite good. She was like the Doctor character from Daredevil, wasn't she? The same actress, I'm pretty sure. So I quite like the roles that she's been in.
Yeah.
But good to see this kind of moving along. That's very, very good. Am I misremembering, or is Anakin in this, or is that only in the Obi-Wan series?
I think it's been confirmed that Anakin will probably show up in this, whether that's as or rather Hayden Christensen will show up in this, whether that is actually in as Anakin in some form of flashback or whether that's him doing Darth Vader, we don't know. But it would make sense that he pops up in this because, of course, you know, he's a Ahsoka's former Jedi master, so it would make sense that he shows up as Vader or is Anakin in flashback in some way, possibly, in this.
Okay, that'll be cool, yeah.
Given the timeline, actually, given it's the Mandalorian. Mandalorian is post-Return of the Jedi, so presumably it will be either in flashback or as Anakin shown up as a Force ghost, or as, I mean, maybe it'll be flashback to him being Darth Vader, or, I mean, we don't know, because we don't know whether this is going to be, there's nothing about the plot, so we don't know whether this is going to be set before the Mandalorian and whether it's going to be the search for Ezra or whether it's going to be something after when we saw her in the Mandalorian. We don't know at all where this is going to go, so we'll have to wait and see exactly how he shows up, but apparently he is supposed to be in it as well. So yeah.
I'm pretty looking forward to all these live acts, because we got the Boba Fett, then we got Mandalorian season 3, Ahsoka, Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to all of them, and I like the way that they've set them up as well. Like, you had essentially a backdoor pilot in The Mandalorian for Ahsoka, especially for those that weren't familiar with her from Clone Wars as well, which I have seen some of that show, so I was already kind of familiar with her. But it was a great way to introduce her in live action, and the way that they've kind of spun that off was really good. Looking forward to that.
This will probably come... Ahsoka doesn't begin filming until March 2022, but the earliest, they've said. So we've got Boba Fett coming next, then we've got Mandalorian season 3, then I think it's Obi-Wan, then I think this will be the one after that.
Okay.
This will probably... It could be 2023 before we actually get this, given that they're not shooting until March and there'll be a lot of post work to do on it. So, I mean, it may be that you'll get this Christmas 2022, but I think it's more likely to be a 2023 series. Mm-hmm. I would have thought it.
Do you know if they've had any, like, slowdown on The Mandalorian, because Pedro's in The Last of Us Because he's been filming that regularly, hasn't he?
Not that I'm aware. I think they scheduled it around. So as far as... I mean, the thing with Pedro being in The Mandalorian is he doesn't kind of need to be there all the time. Because there are like four people in that Mandalorian suit, so they could shoot half of it without him. Because, I mean, you know, he can go in and do the voice work for it, but half the time it isn't him in that suit. I mean, you know, it's important that he's there and, you know, there are mannerisms in the way he does things. But, I mean, all the action stuff, it's three different stuntmen that do that sort of stuff, or two stuntmen that stand in. So, you know, I'm not taking away anything from his performance, but it is a shared performance that between a bunch of different people. So, I mean, you could film an awful lot of that and then just get him to do the voice work afterwards. So I don't think it necessarily is going to be a huge issue, him not being on set all the time. They can shoot around it. So I don't think there's been any slowdown from it. I believe that, we're getting Boba Fett next. And I think Mandalorian season 3 was the one plan, the next Star Wars planned after that, I think, is the way that around they do it. I could be wrong, maybe Obi-Wan's before them, but we'll see. I think that was the way that it was planned anyway. So cool. Either way, there's a lot of decent Star Wars stuff coming to look out for.
Still got the Visions show to watch as well.
It was fine. I've watched a few of those. They're okay. I've watched three or four of them, but I will go and watch some more, I think. But I'm not hugely into anime. It works not really my sort of thing. They were interesting, but it's not really canon stuff. And I'm far more interested in live action or more animated things. Because, I mean, there'll be another season of The Bad Batch as well coming as well.
Yeah, there's that.
So that's all the news we've got for you this week. Just some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. We kick off again with Disney Plus, and it's Hawkeye, the weirdly Christmassy Hawkeye TV series, which I'm very much looking forward to. I was one of those things that was like, Hawkeye, fine. And then I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, this is interesting. It's a bit diehard in terms of its Christmassiness, which I rather like. So that's obviously Jeremy Renner back as Hawkeye and with Kate Bishop. And this looks like it's going to be really good fun. So that's 24th of November. That lands on Disney Plus, and I'm very much looking forward to that. Hannah season 3, which is the final season of Hannah, that is coming to Amazon Prime on the 24th as well. That's been a great series, and I'm glad that they're sort of wrapping that how they want to wrap it. So that is coming back for the third season. That's Hannah on the 24th of November. The Outpost also on the 24th of November. That's the fourth season of that coming to Sci-Fi UK. That's at 9 p.m. 25th of November, we have The Beatles Get Back, which is this 6-hour docu-series. It's actually dropping 25th, 26th and 27th. So they're dropping 2 hours at a time each night. It's Thanksgiving this week over in the US. So they're sort of dropping it over Thanksgiving weekend. That's a 6-hour documentary series. If you're a Beatles fan, it's a must watch thing because there's a load of really interesting behind the scenes stuff. It's all being digitally cleaned up and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's going to be fascinating if you're a fan of the Beatles. Also on the 25th of November over on Netflix, we have the fifth and final season of F is for Family. And the 27th at 3:25 a.m. in the morning, allegedly, we have The 100 at season 7. This is about the fifth time I've announced this. They have been saying, no, this is staying. They have been promising that this is definitely, definitely where it will air. So it's no longer on 4 Music. It's now on E4. They decided to move it back onto E4, which is good news because it means that it should actually be in high def rather than in being in standard def, which it would have been if it had been on 4 Music. So it's back on E4. They're running it out at 3:25 a.m. in the morning. They're obviously not expecting people to watch that live. They're expecting people to record it. They're running it out nightly, I think, as well. So it'll run through probably this side of Christmas. Jeez. But we're up there. Hopefully that means it will be up on the 4 catch up thing as well. So it will be up on that. But E4, 27th of November, 3:25 in the morning, you should be able to find that up on your planner and get it to record, I hope. I mean, who knows whether they did say that this was going to be it, but I mean, if it moves again, do not be surprised. I certainly wouldn't be. Over on Sky Atlantic, you have American Rust, which is starting on the 28th of November. That's a new Jeff Daniels series. It's a sort of family drama which follows a compromised police chief in a Rust Belt town of southwest Pennsylvania. So that looks like it's going to be a good, solid HBO type drama. That's American Rust. That's on the 28th of November at 10:05 on Sky Atlantic. And then the fifth and final season of Private Eyes, the Jason Priestley procedural dramedy series, that is coming to Sky Witness on the 30th of November at 9 p.m. on Sky Witness. That is everything we have for you this week. If they want to find more of you, Matt, where can they find you?
You can find me over on entertainmenttalk.org, mainly TV, video games, films, and main night podcasts. We're getting towards the end of World Beyond. A couple of film reviews I've done recently. Eternals, I really enjoyed that. There were some really big developments over at Man United. The manager was sacked because we kept losing games.
Yes.
And they've now got the assistant manager in charge because apparently we haven't planned an actual replacement. So, which is supposed to happen a few days after, but it's apparently been about a month of looking. So, yeah. But different manager for tomorrow's game, actually, which is the Villarreal game. So there was lots and lots of things to talk about with that as well. He did a farewell interview where he got a bit emotional, but he was a great guy. There was nothing wrong with him as a person. He just wasn't quite good enough at the job, unfortunately. So we move on from that. But lots of things discussed for all those different things on entertainmenttalk.org. If you want to follow me on Twitch, I've now got somewhat of an actual schedule. 11:45 p.m. on Thursdays, I do my own Pez coach mode. So if you want to see what I would do with the Man United team, you can find those. The first two episodes, which I've already streamed live, those are on YouTube. You can find those over on Entertainment Talk Plays on YouTube. So that's pretty much my stuff.
Excellent. So go and find Matt over there. Bex, of course, who is sometimes involved in the show, although she did message me earlier to say that she's looks like she's freeing up, so I might actually be able to get her back on the podcast fairly soon. But she is over on twitch.tv/TristaBytes, that's BYTES, and she's streaming daily and various evenings. Lots of fun stuff going on over there of retro games and just chatting and all sorts of things. So go and check out Bex over there. She will hopefully be back on now fairly soon. And Daryl, of course, you can go and find at HollywoodNorthNews.net for all those TV series that you love, which are shot in Canada. For us, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at Geektown UK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.